the audiobook that you might be doing for this, would it be a paying gig? Would they be paying you to do it? Because, like, if it's being turned into, like, an original project, would they be paying you to do it? Okay. Well, yeah. See, that's what I didn't know. That would sort of affect what options I would consider for you in terms of how you should set up a studio. I don't know if you would be willing to invest money into it, or if you, like, you know, that kind of thing. But, like, there's stuff you can do on the cheap, there's stuff you can do with a little bit of money, and there's stuff you can do with a lot of money, you know, but, like, in terms of setting up a recording studio. Anyway, yes, if that becomes a more real thing that's actually going to happen, get with me, and I can walk you through a lot of shit. I've been doing this for a while. so, like, for example, the mic, okay, so for me to sound like I sound here, what all goes into this is I have my laptop, which, you know, whatever, like, let's call that like $1,200 or whatever. I got it. It was like a top of the line laptop, like 8 years ago or something. And it's gone through some major repairs and stuff, and I'm probably going to get a new one eventually. I'm running Windows 7 on it. I'm not even running 10. I don't fucking give a shit, but, I have a room that is, the walls are completely covered with thick comforters and microfiber blankets that I got from a thrift store for a total of $60. I just nailed them all over the walls and ceiling. That baffles the sound and means that I can yell without it echoing. that's not required for, you know, a sound to sound good, but it just makes it sound especially good. I have a pair of $200 headphones. I have a microphone that my father-in-law has basically permanently lent to me that he says cost $500 new. That's what I'm going into. Well, see, because thing is, the Prince of Slytherin audiobook is like a hobby, basically. It's one that I'm hoping to build a Patreon off of, but, like, you know, my career, the reason I'm in this server is to do the Strangers in Boston, or, like, the Strangers series audiobooks. That's, like, a career thing. And it's not, oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so my microphone was $500 new. I think you could get this same mic now for $300. And again, I didn't pay for the mic. The mic was basically a gift from my father-in-law, who worked in radio for his entire life and has like shitloads of recording equipment. It goes into a mic processor that I think costs like $120 new, but I got it used for $50, and then an AudioBox USB digital interface, which was $100 new. XLR cable. All told, the stuff that isn't a laptop probably totals around like $800 or something like that. No, $1,000 with the headphones. But again, this is a professional thing for me. Like I put that kind of money into it because the hope was at the time that I would make money from it, and now I am. I think last year I actually ended up making enough money off of this to pay for the equipment finally. And that'll only get better as time goes on. But again, this is my career. Anyway, so all right. If you ever want to sidetrack me, say you're thinking of doing an audiobook, and I'll have I'll have advice and shit for you. Anyway, let's see. Okay. Let's get down to business. Chapter 24, Family Dysfunctions, Part 1. 27 October, 1992. Somewhat surprisingly, Jim's month-long detention passed without incident, other than the boy's obvious signs of exhaustion. Rather stoically, he'd incorporated 10 hours of detention spent mainly scrubbing various parts of the castle into his weekly schedule without dropping anything else, including schoolwork, 12 hours of Quidditch practice, 5 hours of ping-pong practice, he was getting rather good at the game, and 2 hours spent on exercise every morning. He had also become more diligent in his studies and actually regained almost half the 50 points his prank... He had also become more diligent in his studies and actually regained almost half the 50 points his prank had cost Gryffindor House. Unbeknownst to everyone else, he also continued to spend an hour a day meditating on the... exercises contained in the Occlumency book he'd gotten from Peter Pettigrew. Those exercises helped him to remain calm in the face of the hostility he still drew from his fellow students, but he had to visit Madame Pomfrey 3 times for potions to soothe the burning sensation he now continually felt in his stomach and chest. He had also taken to discreetly purchasing pepper-up potions and calming draughts from an enterprise... enterprising seventh-year Ravenclaw who was happy to brew such potions in his spare time if the price was right. Oh, sorry. One more brief aside. TNT, how long is the Prince of the Dark Kingdom? It's like fuck long, right? Like, it's like... It's like over 1 million words, right? Oh, he's not in here. I'm gonna check that. That's actually matters a whole lot. $1.2 million. Okay. Mental note. TNT needs to know how much work that is. Actually, I shouldn't forget to do that. So. Okay. Ironically, it was for Harry that the month of October suddenly became more stressful. The week after the Boggart incident, he met again with Snape and his mother for lunch. However, while she had been content with small talk and personal questions of a mundane nature during their first meeting, the second saw the woman diving headfirst into some very probing questions about how the Dursleys had treated Harry. Admittedly, the questions were presented in a style that Gryffindors might consider subtle, but to any... Admittedly...
Admittedly, the questions were presented in a style that Gryffindors might consider subtle, but to any Slytherin worthy of the name, they were blunt and invasive. Halfway through the meal, Harry made an excuse to leave early. He also made excuses to avoid every subsequent request by his mother for follow-up lunches. Eventually, Harry finally approached Snape, who, with some embarrassment, admitted that he had revealed to Lily Potter the existence of an Auror's report about his last night with the Dursleys, one James Potter had apparently concealed from her. Snape and Harry both assumed that her sudden interest in his upbringing meant she now knew that he had been intentionally thrown out into a doxy swarm by the head of the family in whose care she had left the boy all those years ago. While Harry's vindictive side took a certain amount of pleasure in whatever guilt Lily might feel over the matter, his more pragmatic side did not want Lily or anyone else looking too closely into what might have influenced Vernon in his... His more pragmatic side did not want Lily or anyone else looking too closely into what might have influenced Vernon in his homicide attempt. On October 25th, Jim's detention ended. With obvious reluctance, McGonagall returned his cloak, admonishing the boy that if he were caught using it without a very, very, very good reason, he would earn a historic number of point deductions. She also advised Jim that Mr. Filch now knew of his cloak, and that Mrs. Norris would likely be able to detect him even if he were invisible. He accepted her comments gracefully and passed the news about Filch and Mrs. Norris on to his friend Ron, who shook his head once more at the unfairness of it all. Today, both Harry and Jim were summoned to the headmaster's office just after their DADA class ended. Apparently Lockhart had not been sacked over the werewolf lecture after all. The password, to Harry's bemusement, was Jelly Babies.
Jelly Babies. That's a Doctor Who reference.
Dumbledore's sweet tooth and its effects on his password choices were well known among the Slytherins. The two entered his office together, and they were both surprised to see Lily and James Potter present along with McGonagall and Snape. All of them, including the headmaster, looked rather grim.
Thank you both for coming so promptly. Harry, Jim, please take a seat. The old man gestured to two empty chairs. As he sat, Harry examined everyone's faces. Snape's, of course, was an impassive mask, but everyone else showed signs of varying degrees of emotional strain. Finally, Dumbledore spoke.
Harry. What? That's not... Okay, I guess that's just a little... All right.
Harry, we asked you here today to discuss some matters pertaining to the Dursleys.
The boy stiffened, his occlumency shield smoothing his own face down into a mask of self-control that mirrored his head of house.
I don't see what's necessary to discuss, sir. I assume that everyone here has some knowledge of how the Dursleys treated me, but I don't live with them anymore, and I'll be perfectly content not to... But I don't live with them anymore, and I'll be perfectly content not ever think of them again. But I don't live with them anymore, and I'll be perfectly content not to think of them ever again.
Damn it. I know you guys might not be able to hear some of those flaws, but...
It's a nose thing my nose is doing that will show up in the fucking recording.
But I don't live with them anymore, and I'll be perfectly content not to think of them ever again.
I fairly understand that, my boy, Dumbledore said. However, we all felt it important to make you aware of recent events.
Recent events, sir? He said suspiciously.
Dumbledore...
Dumbledore nodded over in James's direction, and the younger man addressed his son with obvious reluctance.
Harry, Vernon Dursley passed away late last night.
There was a yawning chasm of silence that lasted for almost 4 full seconds, interrupted only by the soft whirring of various devices and doodads on the shelf behind Dumbledore's desk.
What? Harry said in a
flat voice.
It appears to have been a second heart attack, Harry, Lily
said.
He was a very sick man who nearly died after his first attack in July, and it seems that he didn't do a good enough job of following through his doctor's orders about taking care of himself, particularly where his medication was concerned. This is actually fairly common among older Muggle heart. This is actually fairly common among older Muggle heart attack patients, and especially obese ones.
You said it appears to have been a heart attack, Harry said in a low, quiet voice. Has he been checked for other causes?
James and Lily looked at each other for a second before James spoke.
Yes, Harry, in light of your history with him, I thought it best to arrange a discreet magical examination of the body. He shows no signs of curses or hexes, nor any signs of magical poisons or potions of any kind. Diagnostic spells simply show that he failed to take his medication as he should have.
Which is vitally important for Muggle patients with his symptoms and history. And there would have been signs if his failure to take his medication was due to a confundus or an. And there would have been signs if his failure to take his medication was due to a confundus or an. Imperious.
Harry said nothing. Finally, Lily spoke once more.
Harry, about your last encounter with Vernon. The Auror who interviewed Vernon said.
She paused and looked at James helplessly. He seemed just as tongue-tied. Harry steeled himself mentally and then sliced the Gordian knot in two.
On the 4th of July, Vernon Dursley tried to murder me. I was already safe inside the house's walls when the devices got to it. But the sight of them clawing at the windows frightened the Dursleys and caused Vernon to go berserk. He hit me hard enough to nearly knock me unconscious and then threw me out the back door to be stung to death and then devoured.
Any questions?
Save Snape, the other adults simply stared at Harry in total shock for the matter-of-fact way in which he laid out the facts. Jim was left speechless, with his mouth hanging open.
Why didn't you tell us any of this?
Said James in horror.
Harry shrugged.
Whatever our relationship, I saw no upside to dragging the House of Potter into a scandal, which is what would have happened if it had gotten out that Lord and Lady Potter left their heir with abusive Muggles who eventually tried to kill him in one of the most painful ways to die known to the wizarding world. I survived. I was completely healed. And it would never have to go back there again, so I let it go.
Harry fixed his father with a firm gaze.
Which I assumed you knew, since you had access to the Auror report.
James swallowed and glanced at his wife, who was visibly angry with him.
You're right. I knew most of the details, though I left that part out when I told Lily.
Dad! Exclaimed Jim in shock.
I'm sorry, son, but Harry was right. If the truth had gotten out, the scandal would have been all over the papers. The scandal would have been all over the papers. When Harry never pressed the issue, I assumed that the trauma of the Doxy attack had caused him to block out the memories, so I decided to let sleeping dogs lie, I guess. He turns towards Harry. So, now that we all know what we all know... Now that we all know what we all know, what do you want to do about it, Harry? What do you want to do about it, Harry? What do you want to do about it, Harry? I see no reason to do anything different, James. The man winced slightly at Harry's refusal. The man winced slightly at Harry's refusal to call him Dad, but he wasn't particularly surprised. Evidently, Lily had discussed that with him. Vernon is dead, and I see no... Vernon is dead, and I see no reason to bring a scandal down on the family when there's not even a possibility of punishing the person responsible... When there's not even a possibility of punishing the person responsible for my injuries. As long as I never have to set foot on Privet Drive again, the sleeping dogs can continue to lie as far as... The sleeping dogs can continue to lie as far as I'm concerned. If Harry's cold pragmatism was upsetting to any of the adults in the room, none of them spoke of it, though Lily, McGonagall, and Dumbledore all looked at him with concern. Do you want to go to the funeral? Do you want to go to the funeral? Asked Lily hesitantly. Maybe get some closure. Harry looked at Lily as if she'd gone insane. Absolutely not. I don't need closure for Vernon Dursley. Harry, interrupted Jim uneasily. He's your book at fear. Then Jim flinched from the glare Harry gave him. I mean, maybe going to the funeral will help you get over your fear of him. Maybe going to the funeral will help you get over your fear of him. Why? Are you all expecting a storm of doxies to come flying out of the casket at me? Harry turns towards Dumbledore. Headmaster, thank you for alerting me to these developments. Was there anything else we needed to... Headmaster, thank you for alerting me to these developments. Was there anything else we need to discuss? The old man sighed. Now, Harry, you're free to go. Harry stood, nodded respectfully towards Snape and McGonagall, and left without another word. Once outside, he took a moment to calm and center himself. Nearby was a mirror hanging on the wall, and Harry paused to check his appearance. Then he stopped and merely stared deeply into the reflection of his own green eyes. You killed him, he said softly to himself. You might as well have slit his throat. Then he took a deep, shuddering breath and walked away.
Yeah, I don't ever really, I haven't gone to any lengths to, tell people how to tune into these, other than just highlighting the role. I don't know how to, expand things, really, but, I mean, I guess if people notice that it's happening, that's enough of, I'll probably mention at the top or at the end of recordings, actually, that people can get the audio news roll if they want. Yeah. And there is no set time that the Prince of Slytherin recordings happen other than the, like, I generally do them once I get going in the morning. Like, that's just basically, that's when I, because I try, it's every day. I do them every single fucking day, and God damn it, I'm gonna grit my teeth and keep to that as long as I can. So I just get them out of the way, and it's a great way to warm up in the morning, honestly. But yeah, Well, here's a question for you, Athena, actually. I'm just curious. Like, if you haven't read this far, is it to your preference to hear it for the first time in this context? Or, like, are you reading and then listening? Like, I don't really know. Because this still appears to me to be a very unideal way to like experience the story, be like saying lines a million times and like taking asides about like talking about bullshit, and you know, yeah, I don't even know. I still don't know why you guys listen to this. Oh, good for that. I wouldn't be able to do anything involving text at the same time as listening to an audiobook. But if you can, then great. Let me see. Like when I used to do comics, I would listen to a podcast while I drew, but like when I would move on, like when I would start, you know, doing lettering or even writing or something, but yeah. I would switch to music or just turn it off for a minute or something. Anyway, glad you're enjoying it. 29 October, 1992.
You want us to what? Astoria Greengrass asked in amazement. Look, replied Jenny, I promised Luna I'd come, but it'll only be for an hour. After that, we can skip out and catch the end of the Halloween feast.
If so, what's his name? Said Amaryllis Wilkes.
Sir Nicholas de Mimsey Porpington, interrupted Ginny.
Whatever. Anyway, if he invited Luna Lovegood to this, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Death Day party, and she asked you along as your... And she asked you along as her plus one or whatever. Why do you need us to go with you?
Amy finished expectantly. Ginny paused and then made a face.
Because except for us, it'll be all ghosts and it'll be kind of creepy, so I wanted some backup.
Amy smirked. Yeah, that's what I thought, Weasley. I just wanted to hear you admit it. I'm in.
You are? Squeaked Astoria. Sure, it's Halloween. Replied Amy with a laugh.
What could be more appropriate than a death day party full of all the cat?
What could be more appropriate than a death day party full of all the castle's ghosts? Besides, like Weasley said, we'll be there in an hour and then make the Halloween feast. What could go wrong?
Tori looked doubtful, but eventually agreed. Ginny was pleased, although the way Amy said, what could go wrong, suddenly reminded her...
Although the way Amy said what could go wrong suddenly reminded her uncomfortably of Blaze's constant lectures about the gods of irony.
30 October, 1992. On Friday, Harry and Theo made their way down to the edge of Black Lake, where Neville was waiting under the tree that was their usual meeting spot. "What's up?" Harry said. "Theo said you wanted to talk to me about something personal."
"Yeah," said Neville. "Yeah," said Neville with a wry smile. "Actually, the truth is, Theo wanted me to talk to you. He said you were being moodier than normal since you heard about your uncle dying. He said you were being moodier than normal since you heard about your uncle dying, and he thought you needed to speak to someone you could actually trust without all the Slytherin. And he thought you needed to speak to someone you could actually trust without all the Slytherin bullshit. His words, not mine.
Harry turned towards Theo, who merely shrugged.
"It's the truth, isn't it?"
Harry frowned at his two best friends in annoyance, and then he sighed and sat down. Next to Neville.
"I'll leave you guys to it then," said Theo as he
started to head back to the castle.
"Stay, Theo," said Harry. "I want you to hear this too. Honestly, I need to get this off my chest to somebody, and there's really only four classmates I could trust here at Hogwarts. But Hermione doesn't know any occlumency, and Blaise, well, he's a friend, but his mum has some sort of weird prophetic agenda for me, so I can't trust him with anything. I can't trust him with anything really sensitive, and this is really sensitive.
Oh, one more note for Athena. I do, although I need to catch up on it. I do upload the roughs of these after I'm done. So if you don't catch it and you want to like listen to it regularly, I believe the link is pinned. And, of course, the point of all this is that once I get some more time, I'm going to start editing all of it into a coherent audiobook. So far, I've only done the first chapter and a couple of scattered ones much later in the series that I did before I started this project. It's the Chime of Calamity chapter, the last part of the Hogsmeade's arc in book 3, and a little snippet from King of Rats, which, actually, you don't know about any of that because you're not there yet, so anyway.
Harry's best friends looked at each other. Then Theo sat down on the other side of Harry, who surrounded the trio with the most impressive primacy. He knew before telling them everything. About how the Dursleys had treated him. About how every Muggle treated him. About how Vernon had deliberately tried to kill him with the doxies. About how, in Harry's mind, both Vernon's actions and his death were almost certainly the result of the stress of sharing a home with Harry and his mysterious, fear-inducing aura.
"Harry," said Neville, "you can't think that way. Even if something's been done to you that affects Muggles, it can't have been anything you did. You must have been a baby when it started." "I know, Nev," said Harry as he stared out.
At the lake, idly rubbing his scar.
"But I hated Vernon Dursley for so long. There were times when I wished him dead, and now it's happened, but only after I learned that it may never have been his fault. I'll never know what the real Vernon was like, or how he'd have treated me if I didn't have this, whatever it is.
He turns to look at his friend. And that's without addressing Lily. How am I supposed to tell her that there's some defect in me that may have driven her sister,
may have driven her sister partially insane, and may have killed her brother-in-law. And should I tell her while things are still so bad between... me and James? I don't believe for a second that he's really accepting me. He admitted that he had Vernon's body checked for dark magic. I have to assume that if he'd found anything magical in Vernon's death, he'd try to pin it on me. The trio was silent for a moment. Then Theo spoke.
Harry, this condition you're talking about... Harry, this condition you're talking about... Does Jim have it too?
Harry looked at Theo in surprise. I don't know. I've never seen Jim around Muggles for any length of time.
Well, it seems to me that if you both have it, James can't possibly claim it's something exclusively bad about you. Not to mention, I think it would
be easier to find a cure or counterspell or whatever if the healers have a pair of twins to compare and study.
Theo's right, said Neville excitedly. If it affects him too, then it's probably some sort of boy who lived thing that you just got caught up in. You said that you can see the effects on Muggles almost immediately. You said you can see the effects on Muggles almost immediately. See if you can arrange for Jim to talk with some Muggles for a few minutes and watch the responses.
How am I supposed to do that? Harry asked irritably. Neville shrugged. I don't know. You're the Slytherin ma...
You're the Slytherin mastermind, not me.
Harry snorted. He'd consider his friend's suggestion. Perhaps over Christmas break, he could arrange such a meeting. It felt good to be able to talk to someone his own age.
October 31, 1992. Halloween.
To Harry's surprise, it only took until Saturday to get some persuasive data. Just after breakfast, Jim came down wearing a Muggle-style suit that looked profoundly uncomfortable on him. He was joined in the foyer by Lily Potter, who was wearing a conservative black Muggle dress. The two left to walk to Hogsmeade, where they would join James, and then the three would apparate together to Vernon's funeral. That Vernon Dursley's funeral was on Halloween was strangely appropriate, in Harry's opinion. When the trio returned 2 hours later, Jim was sporting a black eye. Apparently, they'd been at the funeral service for less than 2 minutes when Dudley saw Jim, assumed he was Harry, and screamed out,
"Mum! The freak's here!"
Loud enough for the whole room to hear. Despite the Potter's protests that Jim was not Harry and that Harry chose not to come, Vernon's grieving sister Marge started screaming obscenities and moved
Things quickly spiraled out of control, and the Potters were forced to withdraw, but not before Jim and his father both took some licks, including a haymaker punch to the head for Jim, courtesy of his hysterical and brutish cousin. After returning from Madame Pomfrey, Jim relayed the whole sordid affair to the Gryffindor common room, and Neville quietly passed the information on to Harry while on the way to dinner.
Harry was thoughtful
the rest of the day as he contemplated the news. Though he didn't say so to Neville, there was a part of him, the niddle part of my brain, as he called it, that really wanted to see a pensive memory of the whole fracas.
That's how you say fracas, right? Fracas? It's like fracas. I mean, that seems kind of like a douchebag way to say it, but, I mean, I say foyer for foyer, so, you know, take that what you do with that way what you will. Weird thing is, I genuinely listened to the audiobooks of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy so many times when I was a kid that a lot of the way I pronounce things is just British. I don't say, like, aluminium because I'm not a freaking idiot, but, like, you know, I do have a way of... Yeah. It's a little funnier because in Transformers, there's a character named Scourge who appears in the first movie and like the 1986 movie, and there's a Target Master version of him. And Target Master is where you have a gun that turns into a guy, and Scourge's gun that turns into a guy is named Fracas. Or I mean, no one says that Fracas. Everyone says Fracas because like that's not like. Why would you pronounce a robot's name Fracas? That's just weird, you know, but yeah.
Later, Marson.
Sorry about your internet, man.
Oh, God, hey guys, it's the plot. The plot's here. That evening, the Halloween feast lived up to its usual hype, though Harry was surprised that Ginny, Amy, and Astoria were absent. Harry was also surprised when Ron showed up slightly out of breath just after the food appeared. Given the boy's eating habits, he was usually... Given the boy's eating habits, he was usually already waiting with knife and fork in each hand and with his mouth hanging open. Long before the food arrived. Other than that, the meal passed without incident, and at its conclusion, the students left to head back to their dorms, which was when the strangeness started. Most of the students' paths out of the Great Hall led them past a set of stairs leading up to the first floor, stairs which were now flooding with water coming from a disused lavatory on the floor above. And from that direction, Harry could hear the sounds of shouting, some of which was coming up... from his three missing firsties. Bounding up the stairs and round the corner, with several classmates following behind, he found Ginny, Amy, and Tori huddled together and trying to put on a brave face while being harangued and threatened with torture. By an enraged Argus Filch.
Moving the microphone back a little bit. I've done Filch before. Was he West Country or Cockney as shit?
Does anybody remember? Was it like Troll in the Dungeons, or was it like Troll in the Dungeons? Like which one was it, or was it like both? Well, given that we have at least one person in here who this is as far as they've read, I would say probably keep them in tags. Also, at the same time, it is one fucking line from Filth, so I can make it up. Monsters! Murderers! Killers of cats! He ranted. We didn't kill anything! Jenny yelled back furiously. Mrs. Norris was like that when we got here!
Yes! Mrs. Norris never did nothing to any of you! You all just have to break the rules all the time!
At that point, Harry noticed that the poor Harry noticed that the poor feline was apparently dead, or at least very, very stiff, and suspended by a cord from the ceiling. He also noticed in the dim light some writing on the wall behind the cat. It looked like a dark red paint, or at least Harry hoped it was paint, and spelled out the following cryptic message. The Chamber of Secrets has been opened. Enemies of the air, beware. And below that, in even larger letters, Slytherin's rule. Slytherin's rule. Harry glanced around and noticed that Jim and Ron had moved up to stand next to him and take in the scene.
Can I say, by the way, that it always bothered the shit out of me that petrifications, kind of in the books, but especially in the movies, they just show a person that's, like, still. What the fuck? Like, that feels like cheating to me. Don't you? I want rock. I want to see stone with my freaking petrification. I've read the Chronicles of Narnia. I know what petrification's supposed to look like. I remember, like, Edmonds taking out a pencil and drawing a mustache on that one petrified lion. It's like, they sort of, like, just smoke a little bit in the movie. It's like, that's not, come on! Oh, by the way, speaking of audiobooks, on Audible, the entire Chronicles of Narnia is available for a single credit. There's a different reader for every book, and the last one is read by Patrick Stewart. I haven't actually finished the books. Everyone, like, because even with Patrick Stewart doing it, it's like Book 7 is still a fucking slog, and it's really goddamn depressing, so, you know, but yeah, like, it's just great fluff. I listened to them for the first time when I was playing Breath of the Wild, and that is a great experience. No, for fucking sure. Something else I can recommend on, Audible is, if you have three credits and you want to spend them all, there are two Mark Twain books that are read by Nick Offerman, aka Ron fucking Swanson from Parks and Rec. He read Tom Sawyer and he read Connecticut Yankee, and it's just the best thing in the fucking world. It's so fucking good. I don't know if you've read Mark Twain since you were forced to in school, but like Mark Twain is one of the funniest authors I have ever fucking read, and when Offerman is doing it, it just gets so much fucking better. Like, he's so good. Well, I mean, it's Connecticut Yankee, not Kinetic of the Yankee, but yeah. Yeah, no, it's like, oh my god, they're so good. It's just sort of saying everything kind of like this, you know, but it's, so like all of the, because there is so much dry humor in Twain. Like, it's so, oh my god, he's so dry. And it's amazing to me that they're from so long ago, because they read like modern novels. Apparently there's an audiobook of Huck Finn in the same sort of series that's read by Elijah Wood. I haven't done that one yet, but yeah. It's like, I remember this one delivery of a line where it's like, he's talking about like the context is like, you know, Tom is like reveling in being the center of attention about something. And it's like, the adoration of the masses was like food and drink to him. It's so good. And like, edit these chapters eventually. I'm going to be pulling out all of the rambles and saving them separately, and I will put them up as Patreon exclusives. Although, even though, like, I mean, you know, they're in the roughs, you know, if you want them, but like, it's also, they'll all be like by themselves, and I can paywall them because like, you know, then they're not. It's not copyrighted material. Well, no, it's not copyrighted material. No, I did do the Harry glanced around and noticed that Jim and Ron had moved to the standing next to him taking the seat. I did read that line, and I just checked.
Anything you want to share, little brother? He asked mildly. Jim looked back and forth between the writing and his brother. What? This wasn't me, Harry. I swear, I'm done with pranks, I promise. Mm-hmm, Harry said non-committally. Then both brothers were distracted by a rude laugh from a few feet away. Ha ha! Enemies of the air, beware! Ha ha! Enemies of the air, beware! Laughed Draco. You'll be next! He stopped abruptly, coughed, and then pulled at his collar. Enemies of the air? Whoever you are? Whoever you are?
Harry rolled his eyes. By that point, Dumbledore, Snape, and Lockhart had made their way to the front to examine the cat. Then the headmaster moved to console the man. Then the headmaster moved to console the man. Mrs. Norris is not dead, but merely petrified. She can be restored through a potion that Professor Snape can prepare from distilled mandrake root just as soon as the mandrakes growing in the greenhouses reach maturity. She can be restored through a potion that Professor Snape can prepare from distilled mandrake root just as soon as the mandrakes growing in the greenhouses reach maturity. As for these young ladies, I assure you that whatever force petrified your cat was well beyond the skill of any first year. Indeed, beyond the skill of most seventh years. At that point, Luna Lovegood came At that point, Luna Lovegood came around the opposite corner, stopped, and took in the scene, which included a crying man clutching a petrified cat, a wall covered in a threatening message, possibly written in blood, and a large mass of Hogwarts students with expressions ranging from curiosity to horror. She winced slightly as her eyes passed over Harry and Jim standing next to one another. Then she turns to her three Slytherin friends.
"I see why you left early," she said brightly. "This looks much more exciting than certain..." This looks much more exciting than Sir Nicholas's poetry reading.
Soon after,
The headmaster commanded that all the students return to their dorms for the evening. As they left, Lockhart pulled Dumbledore and Snape aside.
How much distilled mandrake root is required for the depetrification program?
Blah.
How much distilled mandrake root is required for the depetrification potion? He asked.
It varies, replied Snape, according to body weight. For a human, from 4 to 6 drams, depending on size. For a cat, 1 dram will likely suffice, though we have none at all in stock.
I have 5 drams, Lockhart responded. I keep it on hand for my lectures about pixies and other creatures with paralytic attacks, though this appears to be much more aggressive than any of the creatures I'd prepared for.
We would be appreciative of your donation, Gilderoy said.
We would be appreciative of your donation, Gilderoy, said Dumbledore.
First egg was better.
It would mean a great deal to Mr. Filch if Mrs. Norris can be restored immediately instead of months from now.
Well, Headmaster, that's the thing, said Lockhart after looking around to be sure no one was listening.
Do you really want to use my limited supply now on Filch's cat? Or are we sure this isn't going to happen again? Only next time with a student.
Dumbledore and Snape merely looked at one another pensively.
Oh, one other brief aside to Athena. If you're looking for other things to listen to, I have indeed completed an audiobook of the Alexandra Quick series of Harry Potter fictions. If this is news to you, it's about as long as Prince of Slytherin is, and it's done and edited. And you can find it in podcast form on like iTunes or like Spotify or whatever. Yeah, I've books 1 through 5. They are done. And yes. that was my first big project that I did after I assembled my recording setup, and
Here's the thing. The thing about Alexandra Quick is that the author writes an entire book and then just uploads it twice a week. He uploads it chapter by chapter twice a week once he starts releasing it. But he writes the book, edits it, has it beta read, edits it again, and then begins posting it. Book 5, there was a six to eight year gap or something between books 4 and 5, but he did genuinely fall off of it during that time. He's now working on book 6. He's about halfway through it. I know him. I'm in his Discord. I do illustration work for him. So like I'm in regular communication with him. There are going to be two more books, and Cog and Star is from that server. I began live reading fanfics on Discord when I was part of the way through the audiobook of book 4, and Cog showed up to every single one of those, and so that's why I realized that it was actually something that people wanted to listen to. But one good thing about, like, Inverarity treats his fics as novels in a very, very serious way. Like, they have a beginning, middle, and end. I don't know, it's an open Discord. I even created a new readers channel recently, because I started, like, evangelizing about the fic in here, and people started to read or listen to it. Like, I heartily recommend that you read it, whether you listen to my audiobooks of it or not. I think my audiobooks of it are very good. I'm very, very proud of them. But Ivarardi doesn't need a Patreon. He's doing fine. But
And like book one is the one that's kind of like rough. He didn't have that one beta read first. But no, yeah, like each Alexandra Quick, book, like it begins and ends like a book. Like it feels a lot more like a Harry Potter book, and then it comes down at the end. Like it has the last chapter feels like the last chapter of a book. It doesn't feel like, you know, like with most, and this isn't even a knock on most fics, but it's like, you know, even with Prince of Slytherin, there's you know, you can tell when the break between books one and two are, but it's like, it's just that like the first chapter of book two is just the chapter that comes after the end of book one. With Alexandra Quick, the fact that we wait a while for each book to come out is fine because it feels like waiting for releases of a book, like of a book series. It feels like waiting for the next Harry Potter book. Like to me, Alexandra Quick, as far as I'm concerned, is the canonical continuation of Harry Potter. Like there's just it's that good. It is like, I mean, I've evangelized about this a million times here, but I'm going to keep doing it because it's so good. Like it reads like expanded universe Harry Potter fiction, and doesn't have any canonical characters in it. Although he has said that two characters from canon will be appearing in book six, but like that's not the point, you know. But yeah, Alexandra Quick is good. Yeah, he started writing it well before any of the world building for Mac USA was even a glimmer in rolling stupid fucking turfy eye. All of it is so much better. It started when the first book, or when Deathly Hallows was released, because when he hadn't read any of the Harry Potter books, and he wasn't gonna, he was like, no, they're stupid, I don't need to read them. And then book seven came out, and he saw literally every single person reading them, so he's like, fuck, fine, I will. So he read the entire series in like a month. And then he like read some fan fiction and was like, I could do better than this. Very similar to the way Sinister thought about Wrong Boy Who Lived. And started immediately writing fan fiction. And he it was great because he didn't know how fanfiction.net worked. He wrote an entire book and just pasted, he posted all of it at the same time, posted every single chapter at the same time. Which didn't do him any favors in terms of like audience engagement or anything. And so it wasn't beta read. And then he wrote Hogwarts Houses Divided, which is kind of his essay on the whole house system thing. It's a Teddy Lupin fic with 3 OCs from other houses, and it goes over like Teddy's first year. It's really fucking good, and it's gotten a lot more press than, or a lot more play than Alexandra Quick does, because it has like Harry Potter characters in it, and Alexandra Quick does not. But it's so fucking good. Alexandra Quick is so fucking good. The only reason it isn't more known is because it's an OC fic, and people rightly assume that most of those are going to be fucking horrible. Like when I say that
Princess Slytherin is my favorite Harry Potter fanfic that has Harry Potter in it. That's my way of saying that, like, AQ is my first love. Like, that's AQ is just, it's next fucking level. It just, it really is. Thirty minutes
later, Harry stopped in front of the entrance to the prince's lair with Draco, Blaze, Theo, Missy, and Marcus all following behind him.
"Moldy shorts," Harry said authoritatively. Draco looked at him sharply.
"Really?"
"Huh. I'm sorry, Draco." Harry replied testily as he crossed through the black entryway into the lair. Does my lack of respect for your father's old boss of boss blah, blah, blah. Does my lack of respect for your father's old boss offend you?"
Draco said nothing as Harry walked around the table and flicked his wand towards the fireplace. In response, the enchanted longs within burst into flame. Then he and everyone else took a seat, leaving the Hydra throne empty. Harry turns to face his classmate.
"So, Draco, here we are again. Of course, I can easily change that password if you don't see any benefits to having access to this room. Of course, I can easily change that password if you don't see any benefits to having access to this room.
Oh, that's right. I was reading a bit earlier, and I was like, wait, how can he get into the lair after the snake stopped listening to him? It's like, no, you don't have to actually speak parcel tongue to get into the lair. It's just a normal password.
Draco looked around at the massive library. According to Harry, most of the books were still warded against touch, but not all. Of course, the books were only a practical benefit. Even a fool could see that this room was where all the power in Slytherin House would reside, at least as long as Harry Potter was around to command it.
"Go on. Go on. The heir, what do you know?"
Draco's eyes widened.
"You don't know about the heir of Slytherin? You don't know about the heir of Slytherin? You don't know about the heir of Slytherin? Remarkable, considering how you've been lording your princely status over us all."
"No, Draco, I've just been lording my natural superiority.
Spawn. As far as most people are concerned, I'm a kick-ass chaser and all-around smartass who's otherwise flying under the radar."
Draco's forehead creased in confusion at the mention of radar. Harry sighed.
"Never mind. Let's just say that I'm generally discreet in my actions, a concept which is still beyond you. I mean, seriously, would you really have blurted out, 'You'll be next, mudbloods,' in front of three professors and dozens of fellow students if you hadn't taken an unbreakable vow forbidding it?"
Draco blushed slightly at having his lack of discretion pointed out. Meanwhile, Harry turned his attention from Draco to the vacant throne to his left. Then he hissed loudly at it, and the Hydra's nine heads sprang to life. To everyone but Harry, it was still a startling display. Harry conversed with several of the heads, mainly the Cobra and the three-headed Runespore, it seemed, for about a minute before turning back to his fellow Slytherins.
"Well, right, but he doesn't know that, Sakiko, you know."
Well, I mean, well, he knows he can speak it, but... See, I had sort of internalized that, like, the snake that forms the doorway was a snake you had to speak to parcel, to speak to in parcel tongue every time you wanted to go into the lair. But no, it was just the first time to sort of, like, unlock the way. And after that, he just, like, set a password.
Right. The Hydra's never heard of anyone who claims the heir of Slyther... Right. The Hydra's never heard of anyone who claims the heir of Slytherin as a title. In fact, the Runespore is quite certain that there hasn't been a student who could legally claim to be one of Salazar Slytherin's heirs since 1588. Also, something about King Philip II and the Spanish Armada. Blaze, could you do a bit of research on that? Blaze, could you do a bit of research on that in the next day or so?
On it, Blaze said as he pulled some parchment.
Blaze said as he pulled out some parchment and made himself a note.
Hang on, I gotta let my cat in.
Now then, Draco, do you have anything useful to add? Asked Harry with some asperity. Draco started to say something insulting, but then thought better of it. There was a story my mother told me when I was a child. When my grandfather Abraxas Malfoy was at Hogwarts, there were a number of incidents in which several Muggle-borns were attacked, and eventually one was killed. There were no more incidents after that. According to the story, the attacks were by a monster that had been... The attacks were by a monster that had been left by Salazar Slytherin in a secret room called the Chamber of Secrets, so that one day his rightful heir could use it to purge the school of Muggleborns. He hesitated and thought. Obviously, though, that's inconsistent with the man you say that Salazar Slytherin was. Yes, said Harry firmly. Yes, it is. He turned back to the Hydra and hissed back and forth with it some more. Towards the end, Harry's hissing became a bit heated, and in response, the Runespore's responses became noticeably aggressive. Then Harry turned back to the group.
Apparently, there is, or at least was, a Chamber of Secrets, but information about it is limited to actual princes. I don't have full access, so the Hydra won't tell me anything beyond the fact of the Chamber's existence.
Draco, when did these events from your father's story take place?
Draco thought for a moment.
Late 30s to early 40s, I suppose.
Harry stood up and examined the list of prior princes.
The throne was vacant from 1914 to 1943, but the last chamber opening might have been during the tenure of Tom Marvolo Riddle.
He paused and then looked around the group.
Anyone recognize that name? Riddle's not a pureblood name, is it?
No one else had heard of any wizards named Riddle.
Right. Theo, while Blaze is doing legal research, I'd appreciate it if you hit the old prophet records from 1937 through 1943.
Merlin knows this school hides its secrets, but surely if a student died at the hands of a mysterious creature, it would have made the papers. Theo nodded and took notes of his own while Harry moved back to his seat. Now then, it seems to me that there's two possibilities. Either someone is actively trying to make Slytherin House look bad, or some idiot is unintentionally working to make the house... So let's figure out what this is all about and put a stop to it before it gets serious. Questions?
Are we sure it's not the Great... Are we sure it's not the Git who lived? Asked Flint. I mean, Slytherin rules is the sort of crap he'd use in a prank to frame us for it.
As I'm a new listener, I will mention again, that is a placeholder voice for Flint. I have TNT getting with a Scouser friend of his that to do some voice modeling for me for Flint. In the meantime, he is a terrible Ringo Starr impression.
Harry shrugged. He's on my shortlist, but he denies it, and he's a terrible liar. Also, Dumbledore said that whatever petrified the cat had some powerful and highly... illegal magic behind it, and I don't think that describes Jim at all. I'm thinking it's one of the dumber Slytherins trying to intimidate the other houses, one of the dumber Gryffindors trying to make us look bad, one of the smarter Slytherins trying to frame Jim by leaving a clue so obvious that only an idiot would assume we did it, or one of the smarter Gryffindors trying to frame Jim the same way. He's made quite a few enemies in his own house lately.
No puffs or calls? Marcus asked.
Harry shook his head. No Hufflepuff would perform a prank that involved petrifying a cat and... No Hufflepuff would perform a prank that involved petrifying a cat and hanging it up by its tail. And if a Ravenclaw figured out a petrification spell that flummoxed even Dumbledore, he wouldn't have used it in a prank. He'd have published a journal article about it. The others laughed. Anyway, we have a place to start, so let's get to it first thing tomorrow. Say, what does Lockhart have everyone doing tomorrow? Cross-referencing the runic structure of a portkey and a banishment charm, said Missy.
Researching the history of memory charms in the 19th century, said Blaze.
Reviewing my happiest memories in a pensive before we start Patronus work, said Marcus.
Ping-pong, said Draco almost bitterly. Harry chuckled.
You sound disappointed, Draco, but I am really curious to see what the heck Lockhart is up to with that. Oh, and by the way, I was rough on you earlier, but thanks for your help tonight.
Draco's mouth twitched slightly. Don't mention it. Anything for the house. With that, the group broke up and headed to their respective rooms, leaving the printer's lair empty once more.
Oh my god.
1 November 1992. Just before dawn the next morning, Jim rose before his dorm mates, as was his practice. It was a Sunday, but the Hufflepuffs had the Quidditch pitch today. So for once he had some early morning free time. Given the previous night's excitement, he decided that he would find Harry today. And insist on doing something with his brother. After the drama of Vernon's funeral, Jim felt he had some insights into how awful it was for Harry to grow up with that family, and he wanted to do what he could to help Harry work past it. More importantly, he wanted to reassure his brother that... More importantly...
More importantly, he wanted to reassure his brother that he had nothing to do with that prank from the night before involving Filch's cat and the graffiti on the wall that implicated the Slytherins. Jim was sure that if the two pooled their resources, they could get to the bottom of the mystery quickly. Then he laughed at the thought of Harry and himself getting together to solve a mystery. At last, they really were like the Hardy Boys. As he got up to head to the bathroom, however, he noticed something odd. The lock on his trunk was open. He looked around the room. His fellow Gryffindors were all still asleep, even Ron, the loudest... Jim opened the trunk and lit up a... Lumos with his wand to see if anything was missing. There was. Jim normally stored his father's invisibility cloak within a moke-skin pouch at the bottom of his trunk. The pouch was now gone, and in its place was a piece of parchment that had been folded over and sealed. Slowly, he removed the paper and broke the seal. By the light of his glowing wand, Jim read the message it contained.
I got a choice here, guys. Do you think I should read it? My instinct is to read this in my normal narrator voice. Because I know who this is from. Don't anybody say who it's from, because that's a spoiler, okay? I know who this is actually from, and... Or I could read it in who Jim thinks it's from. Because this is kind of, we're getting into Jim's head here. I think that both are valid. Okay, that seems to be pretty fucking unanimous.
Well, I mean, whenever I read a note that is, like, definitely from somebody, I read it in their voice, because why not, you know? But, yeah.
Dear Git Who Lived, I so enjoyed your little prank last night. How you must have thrilled to see three little firsties, one of them your only real friend's little sister, cowering in fear of Argus Filch and nearly in tears over your handiwork. Such a fine specimen of Gryffindor chivalry. Anyway, since it's now clear that your lack of honor is exceeded only by your lack of style, I thought it best to deprive you of your number one pranking aid, lest you embarrass our family... Lest you embarrass our family name any further. Good luck proving it was me. Sincerely, you know who. P.S. Slytherin's rule, Gryffindor's drool. P.P.S. Poof. As Jim read to the very last word, there was indeed a sudden poof as the letter in his hand... disappeared in a gout of green flame. Jim stood there, still with a glowing wand in one hand, as he stared down into the trunk where his family's heirloom cloak was supposed to be. He gripped his wand so tightly that his knuckles cracked. Then he pushed that anger within him deep down into the pit of his stomach, like the Then he pushed that anger within him deep down into the
yeah.
Then he pushed that anger within him deep down into the... This time, however, he was surprised to find that there was just no more room, and the slow-burning brush pile he'd been maintaining for weeks now suddenly ignited into a blazing inferno. "I'll kill him," said the boy who lived, with an eerily calm voice that belied a rage that was already completely out of control. End of chapter 24.
No, you know what? You know what? I asked you guys for your for your opinion, and I'm going to go against it because I think it would be much better if I did this.
Dear Git Who Lived, I so enjoyed your little prank last night. How you must have thrilled to see three little firsties, one of them your only real friend's little sister, cowering in fear of Argus Filch and nearly in tears over your handiwork. Such a fine specimen of Gryffindor chivalry. Anyway, since it's now clear that your lack of honor is exceeded only by your lack of style, I thought it best to deprive you of your number one pranking aid, lest you embarrass our family name any further. Good luck proving it was me. Sincerely, you know who. P.S. Slytherin's rule, Gryffindor's drool. P.P.S. Poof.
I think that's better, because I always read out who read the notes, and she's not here right now. So Ron is trying to act like Harry. I would imagine that not only did the diary make him good enough at that to like mimic the way he talks and like bring up all the little references and stuff. He probably even mimicked Harry's fucking handwriting, you know? So I think that it is, and it's also, it's pretty clear from the rest of this chapter that Harry did not send that fucking note. So it doesn't, it's not lying to the reader. It's just it's just accurately portraying the thing that pushes Jim over the edge. And I think that's valid. Let me save this.